Hi folks, welcome back. It's more than 5 years since I recorded my last podcast episode. Life had taken over. It took an enormous force of inspiration to get over the inertia to this point of recording this new episode. And that's the kind of inspiration the guest on the show today has provided. Bustling with the energy of a young star, 14-year-old Tasmai Krishnan, is a good example of how when someone locks on to their passion early on, gets that infinite energy to produce good quality content at an admirably fast pace. What has he done? And that's what we'll speak about today. So here we go. Tasmai, very, very happy to have you on the show. Please introduce yourself to the audience.
Yeah, so first of all, hey everyone, I'm Tasmai and it's an absolute pleasure to be on this episode of Crystal Ball, and I'm really looking forward to how I can enrich the audience with my thoughts and learn from you as well, and hopefully add to this wonderful show's flavor. I hope you're keeping well, and again, as we go into this episode, I'll reveal more about myself, and I'm too excited to hold my horses, so I really can't wait for this.
Whoa, okay, so that's the sense of energy right there. Okay. Tasmai, I know you didn't introduce in an elaborate manner, but we'll move into the first section right away. Then it's going to be Tasmai Cricket in Crick Static, right? So we'll talk about all of that. Player, critique, commentator, who's Tasmai? One of this, all of this, a bit of everything, or some more than the other? Why don't you share your thoughts?
So again, there's a very famous quote that jack of all trades, master of none. But, I hope to be a master of all at the same time, because all of them, all these three aspects that you had mentioned work together for me as a force, a player, as I, took the field, with all the energy, very zestful onto the field. When I started off playing cricket, it was first only because of the enthrallment and the enjoyment that I used to get out of it while playing the sport. It's something that, I breathe for nowadays, cricket. It's almost as if it's an integral part of my life. And once I took over a commentator's role, at SportsKeeda, at the age of, 13, I started commentating. And once I took over commentary, it was something that gave me a lot of perspicacious insights as I started playing. Because once I was, early on when I was playing, it was only because of the excitement, just running into bowl, batting. I never used to care about my performances. But as the pressures, started mounting on me, and as I got bestowed with captaincy early on, it became too much to handle at the same time. And then once I, started commentating for SportsKeeda, I did a lot of international games. As it progressed, I did a few national games, Asad Mushtaq Ali, I did a few international fixtures. And as I did that, as I started analyzing how the batsman is batting, how the bowler is operating, how the fielders are positioned and stationed, after a while, it really did add on to me, my captain's roster. When I was on the field, when I used to see the batsman from an angle from where I was standing, I was able to predict what he would do. So that worked in my favor. And critique is something that has aged very well for me. It's because early on, I was someone who used to lash on to players quite easily. I used to, be very, very critical of them if they misperformed and if they underperformed. And my Instagram posts are a testament to that, because, I was very radical with my posts early on. But then, that's the beauty of cricket. It's a binding, sport for me, because once I had a rough patch in the game, I was unable to make runs. I was unable to pick up wickets. Selections weren't going my way. I realized the pressure that is put on a 14-year-old must be, not even 1/4 of what is, being, 28 or a 30-year-old who's struggling to make it to the national side, not having, too much of a safety net to fall back to. So I think the critique in me has really mellowed down, but the commentator and the cricketer in me continues to stay very ebullient, and I'm someone who always wants to grow. And this looks like a very good opportunity as well. So, yeah.
Wonderful, man. You talk about stuff like aged well, and I'm still conscious of the fact that you're super young. Okay, let me ask a question. So it's interesting, right? I knew so much about Crick Static, but not about your stint as a commentator.
Yeah.
Quick bit there, right? Now, you talked about how being at the stands and commenting about the game has helped you improve as a cricketer on field.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about, you've played casual cricket with friends or represents a school or played in school teams. or anything beyond? And is that the lens with which you're saying that that's where it has improved? Or how's it? Where do you play nowadays? What is the level at which you play? And what's your game? Batter, bowler? Talk a little bit about that.
So I am an all-rounder. I'm a left-arm spinner. You know, that's the going, and that's the selling, you know, kind of art form in cricket currently. And I'm also a right-hand batsman. I play for my school, Vidya Mandir, Mylapore, and, you know, I take a lot of prestige in that, captaining the side as well. And the lens that Sports Kira gave me as a commentator, it didn't take me places. You know, I didn't immediately jump from the school team to the state team. I didn't start playing district and all of that. But the one thing that Sports Kira, the analytical point of view that I got there, the perspective that Sports Kira had taught me in 3 months, you know, it was truly scintillating. That showed a lot and on the field as well. I mean, on a whole, you know, once I was captaining a squad that on a whole, I always say that the captain should take blame, but the squad is also responsible for a loss. That's one thing that I believe a lot in. And we were going through a rough phase, you know, we were losing a lot of games. But then once I realized that too much pressure was being put on the side, we all were going for the win. And that's when I came across one of the very famous quotes that I continue to, you know, story, and I continue to share with a lot of people, from my idol, my god somewhat, you know, MSD. He said, focus on the process and the results will come about. So I started, you know, going on that mantra, and that's exactly what has led me to this position. I must say, Sports Kira, yes, it did help me in a lot of ways, but I continue to represent school only. I've not gone big places with regard to my game, but if anything, I've improved as a player. It's given me a lot of scopes on a whole, you know, when you're captaining a side. It's not about just going out there and saying, you know what, I want this fielder's position in 45 degrees. I want an off spinner to bowl to the left-hander. Sometimes it's just about understanding the player. I recently came about an article in which T. Natarajan, you know, who was very unlucky to miss out on the World Cup squad, he's revealed this in an interview, that when Bhuvneshwar Kumar was bowling the last over versus the Rajasthan Royals in a high-octane thriller, Pat Cummins walked up to him, and we have seen how many times that micromanagement hasn't worked in favor of the team that is bowling second. So Pat Cummins walked up to him, and all he asked him was, are you okay? So for me, that is good captaincy, and that's something that Sports Kira taught me how to be a good captain, how to be, you know, how to be very insightful, how to handle a team. And that is really translated onto my performances as well. After Sports Kira, my game has gone up a notch, and I'm really happy that I'm able to contribute to the team's success.
I know you interned with Sports Kira. Do you continue to be a commentator on the side of your school team? And again, in your school team, you're continuing as a captain. Where is it on the commenting side, and where is it on the playing side at this moment?
So, given the fact that I'm a CBSE class 10 student, board exams, so I had to take a break from my commentary stint. But I am working. I still, you know, whenever I can, I catch up with the team. I met with my bosses also recently. I try to take up a few assignments. And Sports Kira, the environment on a whole is so welcoming. I had a boss, Surya, and my ex-boss Harbil as well. Those two were very instrumental in my success, and I must say, I've taken a break from commentary. I am working more towards my own ventures, Cricstatic, as you had mentioned. And on my game side, about how I'm playing currently, you know, that just goes about playing regular matches on weekends, you know, going for training sessions. And overall, for me, I used to take a lot of pressure early on when I was playing the game. It used to be a lot of pressure about, sometimes it was about cementing a spot in the squad before you were captain. Sometimes it was, you know, performing, because so many people are expecting you to perform after you're captain. But, you know, somewhere I found the middle ground about being able to enjoy and at the same time be responsible and to be able to lead the side. And leadership is something that I enjoy. You know, I like spearheading squads. I like spearheading a lot of goals as well. So it's something that I enjoy doing. And cricket on a whole is, you know, coming to me naturally, if I could say so.
Wonderful. Wonderful, buddy. You clearly sensed where I was coming from. Telling you, I was thinking as I asked that question, on top of all of this, you have school. How do you manage? And pretty much you flipped and responded from the, that perspective. So we'll move on. Exciting segment. So we've kept so far the Cricstatic as a little bit of a secret out there. Talk to me about Cricstatic, the genesis, and where how that has taken shape in your own words. Please go ahead.
So Cricstatic was a dream that came to life in about 1 month. I still remember after the World Cup debacle in the final, you know, on November 19th, I was just sitting there, you know, I just called my boss, because the next day I had to resume. So I called him and I said, you know, what is happening? This can't be true. And he said, you know what, you're saying so much about this. Why don't you take some initiative? And I said, yeah, that has been in the back of my mind for quite some time. Let me get back to you on this. And then I remember, I think there was some random game that I was watching on the TV, and my mom was sitting near me in the hall. And I said, this ball is going to get out sweeping because he's got a short, fine leg position, very fine, very square. And, you know, he's going to bowl a little faster onto the middle stump. And I said this verbatim. And after the wicket fell, the same next delivery, the wicket fell. And after which the commentator on air, you know, said the exact same thing. I'm quoting what the commentator said. So, you know, for everyone there in that hall that day, it was a big shock because it's not something that many people can do easily. First time, yes, it's luck. But I did that throughout the game. I was able to predict the flow of the game. And then people said, okay, it was just one match. He can't predict the rest of it. But then as I went about it, I started predicting more. I started getting into the analytical side. And I just knew all of this, but I felt, you know what, you know, from a lot of push from the family and friends and all of that, they all told me, you've got so much of, you know, intellect regarding the game. Why don't you take it to the next level? So then I remember what my boss had said, and I gave him a call. Surya is one of the most, you know, wholesome guys you can ever meet. He's always very welcoming. So I called him and I said, you know what, I want to start a podcast. I want to do it immediately before the auction. I want to predict the, you know, where players can possibly find their homes in this IPL auction. So I really want to do it with you. If you're up for it, let's do it. If not, I'm okay going solo, because I needed some validation at that point as well. And I remember him telling me, let's do it. And then that was all. And then the next day we sat for a shoot. We tried decoding almost every single team. We did a detailed SWOT analysis. And after which, once that season was published, I must say that was a blockbuster. We had an accuracy rate of 90%. We even predicted the possible replacements for a player correctly in case the player X gets injured. And you know, a lot of people reached out to me saying, this is terrific. How are you doing this and all of that? And the best part is, I'm sure even you agree, because even you have a podcast of your own, that, you know, when you do this, you get a sense of satisfaction because you're enjoying what you're doing. And at the same time, you're helping a lot of people understand, because till date, the greatest comment that I've got about, you know, my podcast or now, which has branched out, I think that will be the next question. But the greatest yep. comment that I've got about is basically that, you know, I don't need to listen to commentary anymore, because whatever I listen to in your podcast, you know, I'm able to immediately pick up from that in the next game. So I think for me, that is the goal, to make sure that people are able to understand cricket in the easier way than the how the commentators explain it on air. And it's something that I enjoy doing, something that people are telling me that I excel at, and hopefully I can get a career option out of it as well.
Sure, absolutely. I'm already, that part I can predict. You do have a career ahead in that space. I'm just smiling, beaming with all of what you're saying. That's my great. So you kind of almost you gave a nice segue to the next section. So you also mentioned when we spoke just before in planning for the podcast, Crick Static is now branching out from being an audio podcast to much more than that. Talk to me a little bit about that, and around that, I also wanted to check with you, who are the kind of interesting personalities that are well known that you've spoken to for the podcast so far, right? Just share your thoughts on both the branching out of Crick Static into something beyond that, as well as who are the folks you've touched, some known personalities that you've interacted with. Go ahead, please.
Absolutely. So again, Crick Static branching out from a podcast to a YouTube channel, again, that is another very analytical and a very tactical decision that I'd taken, because I had seen the success that I'd got in my first season. I was trending number 8 in Chennai for a long period of time, in fact. So once I had gotten that validation, I felt it was let me continue with Spotify. But again, exposure is what life is, in my opinion, because I felt the more I get exposed to a different environment, more it adds to my CV, more it adds to my personal arsenal as well. So I first took that. It was a gamble that I had taken. First season, I did that. Second season, I came back with a special episode with a few of my colleagues. And that takes me on to the interaction segment. I'll return back to this as well. But I have not spoken to a lot of known celebrities. I have a lot of exciting projects in the pipeline. But for me, it's not about the magnitude of the person's fandom or the fame. It's just about the intellect that that he or she possesses and how I can interact with them. I'd interacted with a lot of my SportsKita colleagues. I'd done a lot of shows with them. In fact, I'd even done two, which had become absolute chartbusters, I think 3 days back. So I interact with a lot of people, whether it's Surya, whether it's Habil, whether it's Sai. All of these people have been very kind enough to join me for shows. I've done it with my big bosses as well at SportsKeeda. So I learned a lot because I see everything as a learning curve. It's something, it's exposure. It's a good way for me to increase my sense of curiosity as well. Because in the process, as you start to learn more, you start questioning more. Because I learned recently that water retention in a surface on a pitch is very key for dew as a factor, or, you know, the whether the surface will spin or not. So as I started doing that, I did a whole analysis on how the water retention capacity is on different surfaces in India. So I've done such, you know, SWOT analysis of unimaginable aspects as I started questioning. And I think that has really, helped me because of my colleagues who I've interacted with. And coming back to how Crickstartic had, branched onto YouTube, I had a lot of people who ever run a podcast nowadays or whoever run any kind of a segment, whether it's even a YouTube show, want to branch out immediately. They want to diversify from the get-go in search of views. But I felt it wasn't the right time initially when I had started it off. When I started Crickstartic off, had a great first season, was trending number 8. I was all, above the sky. I was on cloud 9. But then after a point of time, I realized that let me first find my feet in Spotify properly. Because again, life throws a lot of ebbs and flows. So I've only seen the up and I just wanted to see the down as well. So I had seen that in my second season, in all honesty. I didn't have the greatest of seasons, but the overall enjoyment was great because I extended the duration of my shows. And that was another learning that I made. And that was the perfect time for me to get onto YouTube because a lot of people had given me the feedback that you're very analytical. You speak a lot of sense. Whatever you say comes to life. You've definitely taken a course in astrology, no doubt about that. But maybe I've actually seen the crystal ball. Who knows? But yeah. Then,
oh, wow. Then I like people, the point. Go. Go for it.
Then a lot of people had told me, you know what? You should probably reduce your duration. And after a point when I was listening to another podcast, I realized that, why am I not staying riveted? Why am I not enthralled? Or why am I not engrossed in the show when I was listening to a certain X podcast? And then I realized it was because there were no visuals and the duration was too long. So when I came on to YouTube, what I did was I shortened the duration. I segmented it. I found a sponsor for myself, Wannabuy. It is run by two wonderful people and they continue to serve my show with a lot of gratitude. And I'm very happy that I have a sponsor like them. So I'm running this show now on YouTube with shortened episodes. And now I'm seeing a lot of growth. I clocked 250 subscribers in a month. And I'm really happy that I'm able to see such monumental growth in such a short period of time. And the best part is, I'm reiterating this, it's basically me enjoying what I'm doing on a whole. So it's almost as if it's a vocation that pays me now. So I'm very happy.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So very interesting. You talked about why part of branching out from podcast to YouTube. One of the things that I've realized, I mean, maybe it's going to be both, right? Because when I listen to podcasts, it's generally usually on a morning walk or something like that, right? So it does help to just stay tuned to just an audio medium. But I also see what you're saying, right? Like from a covering audience with different kind of how they consume content, probably it's going to be both if I'm right, right? You're going to continue doing Crickstartic as a podcast and probably going to have your YouTube, or is it just one, the other, or the same content, right? It's just the audio feed that goes there versus both audio visual going into YouTube, or where's your head with respect to that thought?
So I'm someone who, I don't experiment a lot. Once I latch on to something, I stick to that, and I don't think it's because of grit. I would say it's a defect of mine that I don't experiment a lot. But once I latched onto YouTube and once I had started seeing success in YouTube, a lot of people had, irked me to go again for Spotify. They told me, why don't you just try, just put the audio there with the visuals, you put it on YouTube. But after a point, after I went to the analytical part once again, I realized that, looking at numbers and matrix and all of that, that for me, YouTube is the only way people are coming in. I had an 80% YouTube and a 20% Spotify split until, time is ticking currently. So I was looking at that perspective of it. And the reason I've taken a break from Spotify is, again, as you said, I want to first streamline. I want to get my YouTube passage very clear. I want to clock a certain number. I've got a goal of mine, which I'll be very happy to share once it's completed. So after that, I thought, let me experiment back. Let me go off to Spotify once again so that there's a safety net to fall back to, because now if I do Spotify and I also do YouTube at the same time, there are a lot of people say that multitasking is not one of the best things to do early morning. And since my shoots are predominantly early morning, it becomes very hard for me. So That's why I stick to only YouTube as of now.
But I also noticed, know what? You talk so much about metrics, engagement metrics, right? You talked about visitors, engagement rates, click-throughs, and whatnot, right? I mean, like, and then of course, I remember you talked about search engine optimization, target audience, engagement metrics, goals.
Yeah.
These aren't stuff that teenagers regularly talk about, right? So why are these important for you, right? Like, how do you relate to these numbers, and what do they mean to the purpose that you're trying to achieve?
So I must say, first of all, this is hereditary, because my dad was a school of sales, and you know, it comes from him because he was a great salesman, and I get that same. I think it just passed down to me because I'm very meticulous when it comes to all of this. I always try to give, if I take over a project, I want to give my 200% towards it, because that's one thing that I try to work towards. Even if despite you had asked a very, you know, good question early on about how I balance my school life, how I balance cricket and all of that. And I think it comes down to the fact that, you know, not to toot my own horn here, but I'm very gritty. I won't give up on something very easily. And I think the reason why I talk about numbers, and, you know, this generation on a whole is like that, but the reason I talk so much about search engine optimization, target audience, SMA, and all these various aspects, such as acquisition marketing too, it's because I realized that, you know, if I want to make this successful, I've got to put in double the amount of effort. Because when you have, there are a lot of competitors who are better than me in YouTube. I must say, you have reputed people like, you know, Chika, who's doing commentary. He's an alumni from B. I'm very proud to say that. Then you have you have Ravi Ashwin, who's always very insightful and making controversies. So he's an inspiration of mine too. So as I came onto this field, I knew that I've got to have that X factor. And the X factor would be that no one would expect a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old to come out with such, you know, bamboozling numbers. I always want to keep my numbers game on top. But I've taken, you know, a purposeful check that I'll not go and check my numbers every week or every month. I try to keep that part on a check, because if I start checking my numbers and I see a decline, I am the kind of person who will have a lot of dissent and a sense of factionalism. But at the same time, I'm also the kind of person who will try to bounce back. But I didn't want any sort of negativity to latch on to me, to kill the fun part of my podcasting and my, channelizing on YouTube. So I decided I won't check my numbers. But again, it's whenever you take over a project or you would take over something that is tech related, it's important to know your numbers. And again, numbers don't lie, and I'm very particular on that, because I'm someone who advocates for Virat or Sachin. So numbers don't lie, guys. So again, that's basically it.
You talk about a very important life lesson, right? Whether it is the weight or blood pressure, you don't watch every day. That is a learning that comes much later. But you also talk about, even for social media engagement metrics, don't get stuck on it so frequently that you miss the fun part of doing what you're doing, right? Like, fantastic, man. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So you're bang on about the, you know, fun part. You've got to, I think the one thing that I've seen with a lot of people, I know a few YouTubers who are my age category as of sorts, you could say that, or even elder to me, a few in college too. A lot of them, they publish one season, see, you know, big ups. They see a lot of growth. Second season is a big downfall for them. And third season, you won't see them at all, because the third season won't exist. Because again, I feel that's the one thing, that when people are so numbers oriented, the problem that happens is that, you know, after a point, you start doubting yourself whether you're actually good. And that's the reason I consciously make an effort not to check my numbers on a regular basis. Know your numbers, but don't over know your numbers. There's a very thin line between the both of them. And I try to find the middle ground. And that's exactly what, if people say that I'm running a good YouTube channel for a one month start, I must say, you know, that's got to be my motto that has been helping me. So yeah, that's exactly what has been helping me in the expansion of my channel as well.
Wow. Okay. Tasmai, it's been 25 minutes almost into the episode, and it didn't feel like we even got started, but a lot of content out there. And you speak fast, man. And like, I think if it's a podcast, somebody's going to listen at 0.75 times speed, I guess. That's good, right? I'm just kind of rubbing off on all the energy. Super. So let's move on to another dimension. I think Cricstatic, we spoke about a lot. Cricstatic, and is just a quick question there. Is your YouTube channel also called Cricstatic, or is there a different name to it?
Yes, it's called Cricstatic, and yeah, it's available. Nice. Please do subscribe to it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you. I will. Right. I will. I'm like, wow. I did look up your podcast in Spotify, but YouTube as well. I'll definitely look at that. Okay, let's move on to the another dimension, right? Yeah. I know and I hear you are also an active Model United Nations participant. Not just a participant, you've had HICOMs and BDs and whatnot, right? So yeah. Navid Munnar, if I were to just use the language of these days, right? So talk to me a little about it. I mean, some part of it is natural because you've also come across as a great communicator just in the flow of the language. To just share a few topics that you spoke about, and then I have a follow-up there. But just let's get started with this segment of a different dimension. Please go ahead.
So MUN is something that I must say a lot of people doubted that wouldn't come to me naturally, because I have a brother at home who's almost the king of MUNs right now, because he's into MUNs. He's got double the amount of awards than me and probably even better ones on a CV. So, you know, coming into that, I had a lot of pressure. You know, a lot of people said that Tasmai can't crack MUNs. No way. Because I never used to be very, you know, public about what my thoughts were on diplomatic, you know, issues in the world, because that's something that I thought is not my thing to interfere in. I once the Russia-Ukraine conflict started, you know, that's something that immediately, you know, got me engrossed in. Because after a point when people started talking about it so much, Russia-Ukraine, I remember raising a very sheepish point in a family dinner saying that it doesn't affect me. So why should I even be concerned? And everyone stopped eating dinner and just stared at me for 2 minutes. And that's when I realized that, you know what, there's much more than cricket. I've got to get into this realm to be able to crack MUNs. And I started, you know, my MUN research very early on, and I had a helping hand from my brother, you know, as I had started early on. He was very clear that I had to build myself on my own. He said, you are an entity of your own. I'm an entity of my own. So I'm not going to interfere in how you go. So if you want to make it big, you've got to make it big on your own. But if anything, I'm going to guide you on how to do it. So I continue to have his guidance if anything doesn't go my way. But about MUNs and the topics that I've discussed, you know, every MUN, I'm a human rights delegate. First of all, I have to put that on record. It's something that I connect to very easily, human rights, advocating solutions for human rights, because I must say, you know, human rights was something I could relate to easily, very hard to prep on. You know, you have to do a lot of research. And I must say, you know, it came to me naturally after I won my first high commendation in Chettinad Vidyashram, because the topic I discussed there was Israel-Palestine. And I still remember I came in clueless. I didn't know what was going on. I had absolutely no idea what the Gaza Strip was. It had a special emphasis on Article 14 and 15. And I had no idea what those articles were. And I remember sitting perplexed, you know, in my room at around 1 a.m. prepping for the MUN, which was at 9 a.m. And I'd given my heart and soul to it. And after a point, you know, I just realized if I go out there and be commanding, and at the same time, if I try to be as diplomatic as possible, I might be able to crack it. And I had a very dismal day one. People didn't even know who the delegate of Malaysia was. I was representing Malaysia. And then I realized, as I told you, if one facet of mine that I like to toot my own horn about, it's about being a little gritty. And, you know, I didn't like not being recognized. I want to be the loudest person in the room. I want to be the most seen person in the room. So I came back after day one. I went through every single document that was published by the UN, every single document that was published by random sources, which had a lot of solutions to give, on the pressing matter. And after a point, I came up with some outstanding prep, and day two and day three just came naturally to me. And then after that, there's been no looking back. I've been I'm in a consecutive streak of 4 best delegates now. And hopefully that, it translates onto another double hat trick for me. And yeah, again, the issues have been of, you know, various, you know, matters, whether it's the Russo-Ukraine conflict, whether it's the Israel-Palestine conflict, whether it's just about the global refugee crisis. It's MUN is one thing. What you learn is a lot of people look at MUN as a diplomatic forum where you can learn a lot about world issues. Definitely, that's 50% of it. But the 50% that I cherish being a people's person, a very sociable person, is that I like the aspect of MUNs where you gain a lot of exposure, a lot of experience. You talk to a lot of new string of people. You learn a lot. And in fact, I met a lot of people, because in Chettinad, to finish second out of 170 people, it wasn't the biggest achievement for me. I had communicated in Hindi with the Hindi delegates in break with. I have zero no language knowledge with Telugu, but from the little that I'd seen of Chiranjeevi, I'd picked up a little bit. So a little bit of Telugu as well. So whatever I could speak, I learned a lot, and I made a lot of connections. And that's something that is helping me with Cricstatic. Even today, I have a lot of my MUN friends who are helping me. They're all, you know, sending in subscriber pleas to all their friends. So again, it's been a great forum for learning, as this podcast show has been wonderful for me.
Super. What are some of the topics around the globe that you truly care about as a person? Forget about preparing for a moon.
I must say that every issue is very key, whether it's the Russian-Ukraine conflict, whether it's the Israel-Palestine conflict, whether it's climate change, in fact, which is a major issue.
Explain that when you say each one of these, maybe of course climate change is a lot more relatable. So pick maybe a couple of them and then talk about why do you see that as global, or from your lens, how do you see that to be global?
So for me, climate change is one issue that I hadn't read about it a lot, because I knew it because it used to come up as a PTA art contest, you know, draw, you know, how the world is going through a water crisis. And then after a point, you know, once I started getting into more of MUNs, more I got into research, I realized that, you know, climate change, it causes a lot of widespread issues, whether it's intense droughts, you have the polar ice that is melting faster than the space that I'm talking at. You have a lot of storms going on. You have biodiversity, which is declining big time. And I must say, you know, this might not put context. This might be like my dinner table conversation with the audience currently. All of them might be thinking, okay, this doesn't affect me. Let the polar ice melt. But, you know, for probably, you know, it's closer than you think. You know, 5 to 10 years down the line, you don't know how the world is going to transition towards probably a no water land as well. You have no idea how it's going to be. And I must say, a lot of these humanitarian crisis conflicts that have occurred, because the Russia-Ukraine conflict, where, you know, you had a lot of the NATO issues and all of that, whether it's the Israel-Palestine conflict with Gaza, and whether it's the Jews or the Arabs, and all those issues coming into perspective. I must say, I'm someone who's very tech-oriented. So when I had come across this one reel where Donald Trump tells an interviewer saying that, whether it's the Russia-Ukraine conflict, yes, it's very hypocritical of USA to speak about this. And first of all, the solution that he gave was very over-exaggerated. He said that the Russia-Ukraine conflict, what would you do? The interviewer asked him, and he said, I don't care if Russia wins or Ukraine wins. At the end of the day, I want people to stop dying. And that comment made a lot of sense to me, because it's not about, you know, showing your dominance currently in the global perspective. It's if dominance is key, then I think you will not have anything to dominate, because you're losing your subjects in the process. And it's something that continues to concern not only me, but I think a lot of citizens across the world. And social media has given you that platform and that modem to come out and express, you know, various perspectives. And it really is picking up, because you could see a number of issues that are coming to end on a slower basis. Yes, but at least you're seeing a difference than what it was 6 months back. And you can't point out a single finger. You can't point a finger out to give a reason as to why it's coming down. But you can definitely say that with changing times, the world too will change.
Wonderful. Hey, now we'll move on. I know, I mean, like we can discuss, debate, take on a political perspective. But again, right, I'm again constantly reminding myself, you're a teenager growing into a young adult, right? Like, so somewhere there in that journey, fast tracking that journey on some aspects, as I can sense.
Yeah.
So, go ahead. Sorry.
No. I'm Gen Alpha. I prefer young adult.
Okay, so I see your meticulousness right there. Okay, so let's move on. I think but what is common between be it commentator, yeah, or podcaster, or you also write articles, I've seen, or being at Moon, it's at the heart of it, it's about great communication skills, but to be very precise, storytelling, right? Like if you relate to that word, right?
Yeah.
Storytelling being a combination of content and delivery. What's worked and what has not worked for you?
So I'll break it down in every aspect that I've spoken about in this show. So first of all, the common point between all these four, of course, has been to have, you know, a good pedigree of communication skills. If you don't have superlative communication skills, you can't go anywhere, not only in, you know, in this perspective of MUNs, in this landscape of commentary or anything, but also in life, because I feel communication is very key, because whether it's between two individuals, whether it's between your workspace and how you are handling the problem there, or whether it's even commentating on a game, right? Because it's something that holds key to, you know, having a good relation with whatever you're handling or whoever you're handling. And for me, the common point, more than content, you know, narratives or even, you know, controlling how a situation works in my favor, I must say the common point between MUN, commentary, writing, Kriegstatic, and even podcasting has to be able to work smart and hard at the same time. I always say hard, you should do hard, smart work to be able to succeed in any of these fields, because writing is not something that is very easy. A lot of people say that writing is very easy. I can just cook up some stuff. And now with the world progressing towards a more AI oriented landscape, you know, every ChatGPT does stuff for you in 2 seconds. Bard is able to do stuff for you in 2 seconds. Gemini does it for you in 1 second. So you have all these, you know, AI platforms that are helping you. But I must say the authentic writing style is only, it takes a lot of hard work. You have to stick to a certain word limit. At the same time, you should be able to compile all important segments. You should be able to encompass a wide range of topics. So as you write, and at the same time, your grammar should be very affluent. So it takes a lot of effort, the writing part. The podcasting part, again, you know, sometimes when you, it takes me around, I've never in my life taken a second shoot, whether it's for my YouTube video or whether it's my podcasting. I've never stopped a recording and told myself you're doing bad. But there have been a few instances early on where I had to say, tell myself, you know, halfway through the episode, it's running through your head that you're not doing good. But again, that's when you have to go. I think you have to motivate yourself. That's where I feel in podcasting and YouTubing, the one aspect that I think is very important is self-motivation. So when you're doing a podcast or YouTube, you have to tell yourself constantly that, you know what, you're good. You're doing this episode quite well. As you're filming, you have such, you know, thoughts coming into your head. And, you know, once you publish it, you should not need any validation. That's one thing that I would say is a very big skill to have. And with MUN, you are absolutely bang on there. You know, I think the more important part about MUN is not to be able to know all your facts. Yes, that's definitely a very imperative factor in Model United Nations, because in the United Nations, it's all about facts. But I must say, it's very key to be able to communicate. It's very key to be able to give your content in the most, you know, befitting way. If I come out and propose 3 solutions to end a humanitarian crisis in the most dull tone, I'm pretty sure people will not be, you know, riveted into what I'm saying. The chairpersons will not be very excited and won't even hear my points properly. But if I'm loud, if I'm commanding, if I'm able to encompass every single person in that room, giving them equal attention, giving them shout outs in my speech, I know for a certain fact that all of them are still within the loop. They're all listening to me out there. And same with Crickstatic. I try to make my episodes as engaging as possible. I throw out fan contests every now and then. I attach a question at the end of my episodes. I try to add visuals to my episodes to make it engrossing. And with my podcast, I tried making my comment section as flurry as possible. I made it open to the public. Let them tell me whatever they want. I was getting 20 on my first season. Second season went down to 12. Third season on YouTube, I clocked 50 comments. I clocked 60 comments. So it's been, the interactions have gone up only because of the way you're able to narrate your content. And I think that's what sets apart someone like a Harsha Bhogle from an up-and-coming commentator, because a struggling commentator, X, whoever that is, because Harsha Bhogle, he is the most insightful commentator and he makes the language sound. He makes English dance according to his tunes, literally, despite it being a funny language. And I must say, I still remember when he says a line, Kohli goes down the ground, Kohli goes out of the ground. The tone I am saying it is not very convincing. But in the tone that Harsha said it in, the whole stadium erupted. The whole of the world talks about that. Whether it's about the Sachin's, you know, farewell on that 1K surface where he says every inch of grass, every blade of grass has his name on it. You know, again, when I'm saying it, it's not very convincing. But when Harsha Bhogle says it in his enigmatic voice, it has an effect. So I must say content, you know, telling has really helped me. In fact, one of my most successful episodes that clocked 600 views recently. I must say, you know, it's steadfast growth for me. And that has happened again because I realized I was more bubbling for that episode because I am not for this IPL this year at all. I have not enjoyed this IPL one bit, in all honesty. I don't consider T20 cricket anymore, looking at the current scenario of it, because you can see every game where 260 is being chased down for fun.
That's a critic in your speaking. Once again, getting very, very strong.
Absolutely. And I've got to bring out this side here because that's a lot of dissent from you know, my side. I don't feel that T20 cricket, in the way it's going, is very enriching towards the bowlers. We'll go back to the 90s where you'll have a bowler's drought again in India. And I'm looking at only one Jasprit Bumrah setting an inspiration here, but you have 10 Virat
Kohli. Okay, I see what you're saying. So sorry to interrupt. So basically, yeah, you're saying it's getting far too one-sided.
Absolutely. And one-sided in the sense, now, let's say a 5-year-old is watching Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli hitting 250 in 20 overs. That kid would want to become, you know, he or her would want to go on to become a great batsman. No one will have the dream to become a bowler or take the ball and try to win matches with the country, because even the greatest of the great bowlers go for 60 runs on that given day because the batsmen are very destructive. Yes, they're great batsmen, no doubt about that. But I feel somewhere the money-making scheme comes into this part, the revenue-generating scheme, and the pitches are being doctored, in my opinion. So you know, a lot of that comes into play. But if I become too radical, you know, that's food for thought for another day then. Because
Yeah, absolutely. That's my, I should say this.
Yeah,
a lot of what you talked about on the original topic of good storytelling, I'm still kind of assimilating. You made three key points that I noted. One was writing with word limits is not easy. I mean, writing is in general not easy, but to get it the crisp and get the point across, it's not easy at all. And I think I was wondering when you said that, hey, Gemini or ChatGPT can stay within word limits, but there is still something human as an incremental element. And probably that's why people are still able to sense telling, okay, this is human generated and this is AI generated text. I mean, of course, a deep topic for another day. The other thing that you mentioned that really spoke to me was do not doubt yourself in the middle of producing content. Of course, you need to get to a flow state to be there. But if you keep doubting yourself, of course, what you're working on is going to come through slipshod, right? Like not great content. And what's the point? You lose the purpose. Don't lose the fun. Do your stuff. Be in the flow. Don't doubt yourself. And also, once you're done, don't keep looking at the engagement metrics. That's another fantastic point that you mentioned, right? Hey, super. And this point about, I was thinking you were being super critical about T20, but I do get the sense, right? Like nobody wants to be, I mean, probably the way it becomes too one-sided, just the batter's game, then you're just going to have a few ball cannons and batters. There's not going to be too many bowlers around wanting to pick up that art, so to say, right? I see the point. Very well made argument. Yeah. So I haven't heard it this strongly put. Fantastic point. Look, we've been going on for nearly 40 plus minutes. So we need to move somewhere to the landing zone. Let's get there. You are a Gen Alpha person, as you put, and has interesting content about a theme or two to talk to the world about. And there are these whole bunch of channels, social media and beyond, especially you write a lot. And there are stuff like print and television too, right? And I read about your CNBC mention, right? So some of these are almost immediately available, right? Like this podcast is like a button click away, or Twitter Spaces for that matter, right? Some of them really you need to earn through your reputation of producing good content, right? Probably I would say that about being on as a sports editor on a print magazine or being a being on television as a commentator. You talked about Harsha Bogle, that journey. What's your view as you stand today and look into the future?
So I must say I'm a big believer in manifestation. In that way, I completely second Virat Kohli, because there was a saying from the Indian dugout that Virat Kohli, before he goes to bat out, bat outside, whenever there's a crisis, that he tells him, says, I'm going to score 100. I'm going to win this game for the country. And that really, I resonated with that very quickly. And I started believing in self-manifestation. I continue to tell myself that, you know what, any goal that I take, whether it's with regard to the various social media platforms available, I think there's a lot of diversity there. There's a lot of exposure there. And there's a lot of overexposure as well. Because with social media, Dhoni says very famously that you post, but don't look at the comments. But for a YouTuber and a podcaster, comments is everything. Because you have to be on your comments at all times. You have to engage with your audience. You've got to create that outreach. So again, it was a great question that you've asked here. Because I am now put on the spot. Because I'm someone who's on Instagram. And that's limited to my social media. I use Instagram, on my Crickstatic handle and my own handle. So my own handle, I try to keep it as much with friends as possible there. And on my Crickstatic handle, it's everyday marketing. Today, I've reached to around 4,000 professional dashboards. I'm talking to a few big writers, a few budding upcoming cricketers. I watch every game. That's why I'm able to create such contacts. I watch the Bucci Babu, the Cooch Bihar, the Ranji Trophy. So once you start watching these, you make a lot of contacts, and in the process, a lot of interviews come about. I have a lot of exciting projects in the pipeline as well. And I must say, the diversity factor is very much present when you have many social media platforms. In Twitter, you get more fan engagement. You can see that you know, a celebrity like Shah Rukh Khan comes out every Saturday to come out and do an ask SRK. That is, you can ask him any question and he'll try to respond to as many possible. So there's definitely a wide scope there. And then when you come to Instagram, it's more about creating a fan following. It's more about influencing people, if that's the term that people like using nowadays. And but I'm just that old school.
Beyond social media. I'm talking about print and television. Journey. That journey, or how is it? Yeah, go ahead.
So I am looking at that journey first. Definitely, I'm looking at broadcasting as an option. And I want to commentate one day for probably a Star Sports or probably an ESPN, any one of the, you know, noted. I want to broadcast for one of the big, you know, news channels, or I want to do something regular related to cricket on air, because there's no other bigger modem than TV. Because whatever you say today in television is one of the biggest markets for people to actually realize and understand cricket, because I'm tuning in every day to a Bleed Blue show that's analyzing India's chances for the World Cup, etc. And I'm not probably the only one who's tuning into that episode, because if you have around, you know, 2 lakh people turning into that episode, that too on non-match days, it speaks volumes of, you know, the fandom that show has and, you know, how much exposure that the person who's hosting the show as well gains. So I'm looking at broadcasting as a career option, especially since, you know, commentary journalism is something, or broadcasting journalism is something that AI can never take over. And I'm being very certain with this, because I've seen how cricket is transitioning. Cricket commentary in specific is transitioning more towards how former players come about and do commentary. Whether I'll be able to, you know, spread my wings and play for the state, whether I'll be able to play for the country, that's a big uncertainty in my career line as of yet. And I'm not looking to play for the country as of yet. State is an ambition that I have, but whether I'll be able to accomplish that in the next 4 years, again, that's a question mark that looms in the corner. But I, again, to talk about, you know, TV and print, I have written for Sportskeeda. I have, you know, assisted a lot of writers as well. So I know how the writing aspect works. But to write for the newspaper, yes, that will be a big dream of mine, to be an editor of a column. That will be a dream come true, because a newspaper, too, you have a lot of people tuning in to read a newspaper. You have a lot of people tuning in to watch television. So I'm looking at them as possible or even probable, job lines for me, because I'm making earnings out of YouTube and podcasts, what I'm doing currently. So for me, that's, in my opinion, when I Googled what a profession was, it said anything that you make money out of and you are pursuing your services to, or you run an organization, it's a profession. So for me, what I am doing right now, I'm looking at it from a professional lens, and whether I will be able to take that forward to the next step, it's always going to be a gamble that I'll have to take. Because if you fail as a journalist, or you fail as a creator, a content creator, you don't have any safety net to fall back to, it's almost as if you're lagging behind in this generation, especially as you correctly mentioned, Gen Alpha, from 2010 to 2024, as it's quoted to be. It's a very progressive and a very competitive generation, especially. So I've always got to be there, up there with the ranks as well. So yeah,
it's so fascinating to see how you think. What I was thinking in my head, to an extent, as I listened to you, got validated. What you're saying is, hey, the current channels did help you make your current objectives, and you're already seeing a progression there, but you still are looking at newsprint and television as big goals, and you're aspiring to get to that. So I sincerely wish that comes true, right? It'll be great to see you on television one day, hear you on television one day, and maybe you have your Harsha Bogle moment. That's mine. We talked about many aspects of cricket. I don't want to miss this opportunity to ask you what your predictions for the current IPL season are. Who's going to be in the finals, and who do you think would be the winner? That, and of course, this big component of cricket now is women's cricket. Do you also cover in your writing, in your commentary about women's cricket? And what are some of the interesting insights that you have about the game as played in the women's cricket format?
I mean, that's a fantastic question, honestly. And I'll first address the women's cricket part, because it warms my heart to see the way women's cricket is flourishing in India, especially since we have seen how, you know, the women cricketers in New Zealand are being paid on par with the men cricketers, how even in Australia you have such a dominant women's cricket side. And to see that, you know, transitioning onto Indian cricket as well, it's wonderful to see. And I must say, I have done a lot of games for Sportskeeda, especially on women's cricket. In fact, I've done around 4 games. And I was there in one of the famous games where Richa Ghosh notches up one of the classiest 96. And I must say,
You know, women's cricket is up there with men's cricket. A lot of people try to, you know, completely, you know, I wouldn't say they, you know, try to ignore women's cricket, but, you know, a lot of people think that the standard of women's cricket is very low. But I must say, having seen it firsthand and commentated on these games and looked in through to the analytical part of it, I can very well say that women's cricket is something that will definitely become the hot topic in Indian cricket in a few years. Yes, it is definitely there in India right now. It's definitely a developmental project, I would say. But for it to get the full throttle of appreciation that the men's cricket is getting right now, I think it'll take some time. But I am someone who was really advocating for the women's IPL for a long period of time. And I watched every single game of it. I was even there for the finals between RCB and DC. I was watching the game. So I think, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful, you know, initiative taken by the BCCI as well. And talking about the men's IPL predictions for, you know, this season, I must say, this is something that, you know, Chika, Ashwin, and every great cricket analyst who has tried has somehow, you know, fumbled upon. And I think that's the nature of the IPL. It's something that you can never predict. You have such outcomes that, you know, sometimes you are left absolutely bewildered on your seat. And my honest prediction for this edition of the IPL was that RR would make it onto the finals. And I'm looking at the IPL currently as well. I do think that RR would make it to the finals. In fact, we had even said that in our auction analysis, saying that, you know, whatever happens, looking at the way the RR management is shaping up, you know, just by the management, and this was prior to the auction, we had somewhat of a clear picture that, you know, this side will go on to make it to the top four. No surprises in seeing Kolkata Knight Riders and Sunrisers Hyderabad with a 98% qualification scenario as well, as they have played some wonderful cricket throughout this, you know, leg of the IPL. They've gone all out with regard to batting. They've got a very good bowling lineup as well with regard to the death bowling finesse. So I must say these two franchises, no surprises. And the fourth team, I think, you know, that's going to be an issue because you have two teams, one which has been hyped up for all these years, and a lot of fans right now from Karnataka might not be agreeing with me, but there's absolutely no silverware to back them up. The Royal Challengers Bangalore and the Chennai Super Kings look, in my opinion, clear favorites to make it to that, who are competing for that fourth position. And in all honesty, I think, you know, it should tilt towards the Chennai Super Kings, and that'll be provided if they have two good games, one being against their competitor for that spot, as I said, that is the Royal Challengers Bangalore. They've got to have a good game against them. They've got to bounce them somehow, and the net run rate isn't a concern, of course. And then the second is going to be Rajasthan Royals, and I feel both these games are winnable because I must say the surfaces have slowed down big time. You know, the spinners will come into the party, and I felt, you know, Moeen Ali and Jadeja can wreck some havoc with probably an over of Rachin or two, you know, in the middle. So there is definitely a clear tactic that you can go about, but how this will come to life, that's going to be exciting to see. But yeah, this was basically my prediction for the IPL in men's cricket.
Hey, Tasmai, it's been 50 plus minutes, and to me, I'm wondering how you maintain the energy throughout the talking at the pace at which you talk. Fantastic. How do you manage your time overall, right? Importantly, the energy, right?
So I must say, time management is something that if I say I do well, I have a pillar of support behind me. My mom, she's always behind me. She's always taking care of my schedule for me. And she's my driving force, in fact, for me to be able to manage anything properly. She's always there behind me. So she's one of the key reasons to why I've been able to balance stuff, because a lot of parents, you know, are very academic oriented. They say you have to get 100 out of 100. But as my mom realized that I'm, you know, excelling in various fields, I'm able to do cricket and MUN, I'm able to do broadcasting as well. She said, you should be able to do everything perfectly, but make sure, you know, you should be able to break even on your podcast. Your MUN your MUN prep time shouldn't affect your studies, and your studies at the same time should be on a certain level. And I've been able to maintain that level, in all fairness. So I have a very supportive mother at home who's helping me through all of this. So that's been one of the key to my time management skills. But to be more elaborate on how I manage my own time and my energy levels, it's something that is very fluctuating, you know, it fluctuates a lot, because it's very hard to film a 20-minute episode, after that go to coaching, and then go for tuition classes, and then go to school at the same time, and then at the same time come back home. If I have an MU1, I've got to prep for that as well. So it's a very tiresome duty, but once you know, get into it, it's almost like how, you know, if there's a saying that if you wake up for 21 days in a row at a certain time, on the 22nd day, whether you like it or not, you'll be waking up at that time. And it's habitual for me. And, you know, it takes me back to a quote where, you know, Harsha said, Sachin, you were a great habit once he retired. Because he became a habit, and that's what I want to become. I'm manifesting that as well on this platform. That You know, I want to become people's everyday go-to YouTube show. I want to become, that MUNer in the circuit to people, you know, would say, okay, he's there in this committee, let me go to another committee. So that's the kind of image that I'm looking to create. And again, this might sound very bullish of me to say, but again, time management, it's something that I haven't cracked. It's something that I continue to figure out how to do, because every day I'm not able to give myself a definite schedule on when to film my episode, because every day the optimal timing to release a video will change on YouTube. Some days it's 7:33 p.m. to get 500 views. I have to submit it at 7:33. Sometimes it's 7:34. You've got to submit it at 7:34 your video. So it's very complicated, but I somehow managed to balance my time. And energy levels is a very, very good question, because I don't drink coffee, so it becomes very hard for me. But yeah. It's something that I'm figuring out, and I have a very supportive environment as well that keeps me going.
Wonderful, man. It's such an inspiration hearing you speak on so many topics, and you say time management and all, you've not cracked. You've got it figured out in your head on many aspects. I know we can go on for another hour or so. Thank you so much for your time, Tasmai. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today.
My pleasure. And
wish your dreams come true. Right? I can pretty much see through your eyes of all the dreams that you talk about, right? Be it being on television as a broadcaster, commentator, or on newsprint, that may not be too far away given that you already write. I wish you all the best. And thank you so much for making time for this show today. And thank you. I mean, you pushed me to get out of my shell. After 5 years, this is the first episode I record, and this also is the live recording that I do. Normally, I'd send out questions, record, stitch it all together, but this one is a live recording. So I truly enjoyed every minute of what we have done so far. I only wish we have more time to accommodate a lot more of your thoughts, but sometime, some other day, some other time. Wish you all the best. Thank you so much once again.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. You were very hospitable throughout, and I hope everyone does follow Crystal Ball now. I hope you're going to release a string of episodes. I hope it's going to keep coming.
More than that, I wish all of that happens with Crickstatic, both on whichever media you want to put that on, especially for the YouTube channel. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, folks, that was Tasmai Krishnan going in his flow like a fire hose, talking about his passion, cricket, and all the things that he's doing about it. Be it as a commentator, a podcaster, a YouTuber, and a lot more. And it's not just cricket, as you heard. It's youngsters like this provide tremendous inspiration for folks of all ages to pursue their passion, no matter where they are in their life. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did listening to him as he spoke, often spellbound at various points during that conversation. So thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great day. Bye-bye.